You are locked into Locked On Badgers. This is the preview of the Battle for the Axe. And joining me on this preview for the Battle for the Axe is the host of Locked On Gophers, Nate Dickinson. We're doing a little crossover episode with his new show, Locked On Gophers, covering, you guessed it, the Minnesota Golden Gophers for the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Asher Lowe, and I'm, of course, not the host of Locked On Golden Gophers, but the host of Locked On Badgers, bringing you Wisconsin Badger sports, basketball, and football. Make sure you listen and follow for free on Apple, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Right here on the Locked On Badgers podcast, we are bringing you the inside student perspective filled with stats, special guests, and all things Badger sports. Let's get right into it. Nate Dickinson joining us from Locked On Golden Gophers. We got predictions. We got a breakdown of the game. We got a breakdown of other games that you will see on Saturday on Champions Week. Are we going to call it that? I don't know. It's not really Champions Week, but it is what it is. Big Ten Championship game, all that. But mostly, of course, we're talking Gophers, Badgers, who takes the axe. Joining me on the Locked On Badgers podcast on our Friday crossover for game week, for Axe Week, Wisconsin and Minnesota, the new host of Locked On Golden Gophers, Nate Dickinson, is here. Nate, welcome. And we finally get to do the rivalry crossover because we have a Locked On Minnesota Golden Gophers show on the Locked On Network now.
Happy to provide it for you. Happy we're having the game. Weren't quite sure we were going to get here a few weeks ago, but I'm glad it's happening. I'm glad the Big Ten changed up kind of the way it did. I mean, there's schools like Indiana who may not be happy right now, but, you know, it's what it is. And I feel like Big Ten kind of gave the people what they wanted in a year when they haven't been doing that a lot.
Definitely. Definitely the one game I feel like that both Wisconsin and Gopher fans will get up for this weekend, given both our teams, right, in similar positions where this game isn't going to dictate anything postseason-wise or Big Ten championship-wise and whatnot, but it obviously dictates the axe, so everybody cares, just for that reason alone. Getting into the outline, we're going to go through the whole game. We're going to go through every aspect of it, talk every angle, defense, offense, special teams, Wisconsin and Minnesota, and then at the end give our predictions for how this one goes, both outright and against the spread, and give you, in our last segment, every single Big Ten Champions Week game against the spread picks from each of us. We'll see how much we agree. We haven't looked over each other's picks, so we'll see. We could be all on the same page. We could not be. I hope we're not on the same page for good podcasting, but let's get right into it. Nate, where's Minnesota right now? It's been a strange up and down year, kind of the opposite ups and downs, though, from Wisconsin schedule-wise.
Yeah. I was looking at the schedule a little bit before we got on just to get a quick recap again of what Wisconsin had done. And you're right. It is kind of like you flip one schedule upside down and you're back at the other one. Minnesota just recently had to go through a COVID-19 protocol where they missed 2 weeks. Wisconsin had that, obviously, at the beginning of the season. But the Gophers are feeling pretty good right now, just given the fact that they were able to beat Nebraska and do things in that Nebraska game that the Gophers really hadn't done all season. Defensively, it was easily the best game that the Gophers had played this year. You could argue maybe Illinois, but Illinois is, I think, at least a much inferior team as far as where that all stands. And I could get into some of the PFF grades in a little bit, but a lot of it really pointed to the idea that Minnesota had its best defensive game off 22 days rest without 33 players still playing in that game.
That part's crazy to me. So how many guys did they have even suited up?
They had the limitations where they had four defensive tackles in the game in total. They had two tight ends in the game in total. It was either post-game presser or on the Monday press conference after. PJ Fleck said they were one offensive lineman away from really, really being in a spot where they might not have been able to play that game. So it was definitely a big, big hit all around the team. The fact that the defense was able to come up and play as well as it did, the reason why I mentioned it was because the defense has been what's been so terrible so far for Minnesota in games that it's lost. And for it to step up the way that it did in particular was special for me. But really, it was just an all-around effort that PJ Fleck just couldn't give enough praise for after the game and throughout the week this week, really.
Yeah, crazy win, given how little you guys had available to you. And we've had similar issues, right, at Wisconsin. Not that level, not down to four defensive linemen, but basically, all the top skill players have been out for the last few weeks for Wisconsin in different ways, different combinations of them, but it didn't get worse than it was this past weekend with no Danny Davis, no Kendrick Pryor, both senior receivers for Wisconsin, who, by the way, Badger fans, there's a little buzz right now about them maybe coming back because this year of eligibility doesn't count, and they've had so many games taken away from them.
Everyone's coming back, man.
What?
Everyone's coming back, all of them.
We'll see.
I don't believe it.
I'm down for a lot of guys to come back. Obviously, it's all based on their decisions and also the decisions of schools because, I mean, they can't have everybody back, with scholarships. So we'll see what happens. Also interesting that Wisconsin last year, by the way, and I was critical of this decision last year, but this is when we really didn't know how bad COVID was going to be and how long it was going to be. They didn't allow players to come back for an additional year. The spring sports that did get that additional year after their sports were canceled, so like softball, basketball is technically winter, so I think it was like softball was the biggest sport for Wisconsin where they lost that whole season and they would have had an extra year of eligibility. Wisconsin said no to that, but they are saying that players can come back now for football next year, and Colin Wilder, a safety, has already announced that he'll be back. So it'll be interesting to see how many seniors return in basketball, in football. We'll see, but both of these teams have had really similar years with the cancellations, with COVID issues, and both sitting with similar records. Minnesota at 3-3, Wisconsin at 2-3. Where do you see this game kind of being won and lost from a Minnesota perspective?
On Minnesota's side, the biggest Achilles heel on defense has been the run defense. And obviously, we don't have to talk about how much of a strength the running game is for Wisconsin, just traditionally and always. Minnesota, I can pull up just some of the stats right now probably, but they allowed Maryland to put up 45 points in a game in which anyone was able to do anything, from Tua Tagovailoa's little brother being able to pretty much get around the edge whenever he wanted to. He'd get big, big yards every single time. Michigan ran all over Minnesota. Iowa ran all over Minnesota. Even Illinois, who only put up 14 points, they had, I believe, a 100-yard rusher for the first time this season, and they kind of ran all over Minnesota. The story for the Gophers has kind of been so far, because this team's starting like 6-7 freshmen every game. It's lost a lot on the defensive side of the football, and then obviously that takes a bigger hit with COVID. But right now it's been about just kind of getting that experience. PJ Fleck had been saying every single week going through the first few games of the season that it's just about tackling. They need to have more time to get tackling down. And over time they've done that. I mean, I can look at right now. They put up, I don't know how much you deal with the PFF grades. I love this stuff. But their tackling grade against Nebraska last weekend was a 90.3. That's more than 15 points better than anything Minnesota had done before this season. It's remarkable what they were able to put together. It seemed like it just kind of came out of nowhere on that end. But defensive side of the ball, I mean, there's weaknesses all over the place with how young it is, but the run defense has been what's really, really hurt it. Adversely, on the other side, on offense, the run game has been what's kept Minnesota alive, really. Mo Ibrahim, Big Ten running back of the year now, and deservedly so. He's had good blocking all season as well, but every single time this team had something going wrong with it, whether it was Tanner Morgan's inability to kind of get adjusted to a new offensive coordinator or just kind of dealing with having Rashad Bateman, not having Rashad Bateman again last weekend. That was a recent kind of hurdle for him to get over. But there were times where he was really being questioned as this quarterback. He certainly hasn't looked like the quarterback he was last year. But every single game, no matter what happened, Mo Ibrahim was kind of there to keep the Gophers in it at least for a while, save the Iowa game in which the Hawkeyes just blew the doors off things.
Today's episode is brought to you by Coors Light, the beer that is made to chill. When you're watching Badgers Gophers tomorrow, when you are watching a ridiculously awesome day of Wisconsin sports, Badgers basketball at 11, we got Wisconsin football at 3, we got everything happening tomorrow. Packers finish off the night for you. Have Coors Light in your hand, the beer that is made in Golden, Colorado at Coors Brewing Company, as cold as the Rockies, the beer that is made to chill. Go to get.coorslight.com, get.coorslight.com, and you can get Coors Light delivered directly to your house, shipped to your door for a ridiculous Saturday of Wisconsin sports. Talking about the running game, by the way, big news right now is that Jalen Berger, Wisconsin's true freshman who worked his way into not only the rotation, but basically worked his way into the RB1 slot after a couple weeks. He is not on the depth chart, and he was out this past week. It's not confirmed that it's COVID, but it looks like it because there was no sign of an injury. There was no information about any knock that he picked up in practice and whatnot. So he's out right now, and if the timeline is a COVID timeline, there's no way he's eligible to play this weekend. So that'll be a huge loss for Wisconsin. It was a huge loss for the Badgers against Iowa. You could just see it with how they struggled to run the football and how Graham Mertz was, you know, basically put into a position where he had to win the game with his arm without his two best weapons. So it was a difficult thing for Wisconsin's offense. It's been difficult offense to watch for the last 3 weeks, but maybe Minnesota's defense can help them out and lift this team back up to where they were the first 2 weeks.
That's exactly where I wanted to go with it. Just the first thing I had on my list of things to ask about was what's going on with your offense, man. You put up 45 and then again, after 2 weeks off, 49 points. Since then, you can't score more than seven. You mentioned the running kind of deficiencies, but what has it been that teams have been able to do so well?
Yeah, so it starts with personnel, I think, right? First and foremost, it definitely starts with personnel. You have significant differences with who's been available in that Illinois-Michigan game and who was available against especially Iowa, but Northwestern game as well. We found out, I mean, the media found out an hour before kickoff against Northwestern that Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor were both out. Neither was even on our radar as a guy that might be out, and we just find – I mean, that's how college sports works. You know it. They keep everything in-house. They hide everything, and then it just all comes out at the last second. But we don't know when Mertz knew, right, when the offensive coaching staff knew that those guys were going to be out, but it could have been the day before the game. I mean, that's how COVID works, right? You never know when someone tests positive, when they're going to test positive. So changing personnel, losing a bunch of pieces, especially Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor, which really took that security blanket away from a guy in Graham Mertz that, let's tamper our expectations a little bit, is going to be starting his sixth collegiate game. And against Northwestern in that game where he really struggled for the first time, it was his third collegiate start and 2 weeks removed from him being in his bed, really sick. He was completely symptomatic with COVID. That's been out. He's talked about that. So here's a guy that, right, starts week one, looks like a god, right? And now Wisconsin fans, knowing what he was in recruiting for us, kind of the first huge win at that position that Wisconsin had in a long time coming in as a true freshman. Russell Wilson, right, a transfer, totally different thing. This is a guy that Wisconsin had been on before he'd actually thrown a varsity pass in high school. Wisconsin was on him. Wisconsin had offered him, and the Badgers got him. They got their man, and then all this hype kind of culminates in that crazy performance in week one where he didn't throw an incompletion. He was 18 for 18 before he threw one. He threw a bunch of different touchdowns to different types of players, different throws. He was doing everything, right? The deep ball to Davis, the short routes to Stocky. He was doing it all. And then the world just kind of came crashing down on this team with COVID and for him. And it just hasn't been the same since, even against Michigan, right? He didn't look the same. And you look at Graham Mertz with a guy, and you don't want to be overly critical, right? You don't want to be talking about him as a person because he's been a fantastic leader, right? After he struggled, he's gotten in the press conferences and he said, "This is on me, right? I'm taking responsibility for this, this, and this." He's the kind of guy that's going to lead this program for the next 3 years. But on the field, he's just made some really questionable decisions. You watch that Iowa game, two red zone trips in the fourth quarter, and he just completely misses a wide open Jack Dunn for a touchdown on fourth and 10, just an easy throw that he has to make. He completely misses on the next red zone trip, a wide open Jake Ferguson, Wisconsin's tight end, a guy that has been really solid for the Badgers this year in his final go around, maybe final go around, right? You never know. But he completely misses Jake Ferguson, tries to take off running. So it's these split-second decisions that have just been the difference between what he was week one and what he is now, mixed in with the lack of personnel, mixed in with the fact that Wisconsin has stopped and started, mixed in with the fact that I don't know what offensive coordinator Joe Rudolph knows about his team going into the week of preparation, right? Because I don't know when he knows Jalen Berger is going to be out. I don't know when he knew against Northwestern that Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor weren't going to play. So that's really hard to change on the fly when you're preparing to have your dogs in there and all of a sudden you don't. There's a lot you can't do. And so it's kind of like the perfect storm, right? Graham Mertz struggling to make the right read, especially in the red zone, especially when the game is on the line with some of those big drives in the second half, losing a bunch of pieces week after week, and just not having that consistency of even knowing if you're playing a game the next week. So it's a mess.
I want to ask also about just on the emotional side of things. Where do you feel like Wisconsin fans are at with like the state of this rivalry? Because I had the same conversation with Andrew Wade when we had Minnesota-Iowa a while back, in that, yeah, this is something people care about, but it's also something that Wisconsin's dominated for a long time. Yeah, Minnesota took the axe back a couple of years ago for the first time in a while, but I understand that Wisconsin fans kind of feel like Minnesota could be a bit of a little brother, at least at this point. Fans who have only been watching maybe for the last, I don't know, 25, 30 years. I mean, it's been that bad so far for the Gophers. But I do feel like, especially in this season, especially in how frustrating parts of this season have been for both of our teams, that there really is kind of that meaning behind this game. And at least on the Minnesota side, it felt weird ending with Nebraska after being out for 2 weeks. It felt like just – it didn't feel like the end of a regular season. It felt like just some sort of exhibition game, kind of. this feels like a real kind of end of the season, let's go get that axe kind of game. Is it the same kind of thing over there?
I think it is. And I think that the Iowa game last week was a game where a lot of fans on Twitter were saying, I don't care, right? I could care less if this team wins 50-0 or loses 50-0. I don't care this week, whatever. I haven't seen a lot of that going into this game. I haven't seen a lot of people saying, I'm not going to watch, you know, I don't care. The season's over, whatever. COVID season, I could care less. Let's just wait for next year. That's not how this game goes. And I think you know that covering that fan base, and I know that covering the Badger fan base, that it doesn't matter that Wisconsin's dominated the rivalry recently. It doesn't matter who has the axe right now, what happened last year, what happened the year before. If these two teams are playing, if they're both 0-8 going into the game, it doesn't really matter. This game is going to mean everything for this fan base and for both fan bases and for both sets of players, coaches, whatever. The other thing is, I think this is important for momentum. I really do. I think that going into the offseason with this kind of win just helps everything when you get into spring practice, right? Having that as the last taste in your mouth when you get into spring practice and you remember that last game you played, which could be the last game they play. I'm not 100% sure Wisconsin's going to play a bowl game. Paul Chryst said he was going to address that after this game and talk to his players about it. If you want my honest opinion, if I was guessing, I'd probably say why play the bowl game, and that a lot of players won't want to play the bowl game after an axe week game, which is basically the last meaningful game you can really play, right? When you're 2-3 and it's been a COVID season and there's all these cancellations. So I think the game means a ton, and I think it means a ton going into next year for both these programs.
Yeah. And PJ said the same thing about playing in bowl games. Like, it's really just, first off, if COVID's taught us anything about trying to play sports during this, it's that you can't think too far ahead about it. You know, I mean, they put together a BYU Coastal Carolina game in 6 days. Nobody, I don't think, and I genuinely don't think anyone's thinking about a bowl game right now for Minnesota. Maybe they end up deciding to play it. I don't know, as far as leaning one way or another, what those guys will decide to do. From the schools who have already come out and said, hey, we're not playing bowl games, it's been pretty much like these kids haven't been able to leave their dorm rooms except for football since June. So I'm completely understanding if everyone's kind of tired of going through this, especially if it's to go play in the Gasparilla Motors Bowl or whatever it is.
You know, it's a point I made on Twitter once, I think it's a couple weeks ago, and I was saying that it was a couple months ago, actually. It's when Wisconsin first had the news coming out about, oh, there were cases after the Illinois game, the Michigan game looks like it's up in the air, we're probably going to cancel the Purdue game. All that stuff that was coming out after the Illinois game, literally the day after the game, that Saturday, we played on a Friday, that Saturday was when Graham Mertz was announced to be tested positive and a bunch of other guys as well, but their names didn't come out. So there was the outbreak, whatever, and people, right, immediately took to Twitter and said, oh, they've been going to parties, they've been with girls, whatever people say, and it's just not true. Like, they've been so responsible compared to the average college student on a Wisconsin's campus over the last few months. To compare that average student's life and a football player's life over the last few months, night and day different. And I said that, and one of the moms, I won't say who, but one of the moms who has a child on the team and a kid who's living in a dorm, right, with other kids on the team and stuff, she DM'd me and she said, like, thank you, you're totally right. My kid has had no life for the last 3 months to try to just play a little football, and they're doing everything they can, but they can't control being around all these students all the time, going to the grocery store and being around 100 other Wisconsin students that aren't following COVID protocol at all, that aren't getting tested every day, that aren't being extra careful. So I really feel for the guys, and I fully understand and support them not wanting to play a bowl game or wanting to play a bowl game. I think there'll be a mix of both, and I just hope that, you know, majority rules in this case. Today's episode is brought to you by Built Go, crossover episode with Locked On Gophers, brought to you by BuiltGo.com. Built Go is the solution to breaking through your wall, whether it's mental, physical, break through that wall every single day, that part of your day that is just hard to get past. It's like you get to 3, 4 p.m. and you're just kind of hitting that wall where you're going to crash. You can't finish that day strong. It's basically a 5-hour energy without that same crash feeling. That's what Built Go is. What is it actually? It's a workout gel. You put it in your pocket. It's this little bag. You take the gel and boom, three delicious flavors, peanut butter, honey, chocolate, coconut, chocolate, mint, and bang, it combines energy gel with collagen protein and gives you that fast absorbing, easy on the stomach, no crash energy boost that you need to get through that wall in your day. Go to BuiltGo.com, BuiltGo.com, B-U-I-L-T, and then capital G, capital O, capital B-U-I-L-T, capital G, capital O, capital B-U-I-L-T, capital G, capital O.com. Use the promo code LOCKED, all caps, no spaces, LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order at BuiltGo.com.
Yeah, people really have no idea. And honestly, even us who have an idea, we have no idea how long all that is to be able to do that for 3 months. I can't wrap my head around it. But well, let's get back into this matchup here. I believe you already asked me about, you know, keys for the Minnesota side. What are you feeling as far as the Badgers side goes? How do you snap this losing streak here on Saturday?
So Graham Mertz has to be better, and I think he will be a little better than we saw against Iowa. I think this will be an improvement for him off of what we've seen in the red zone against Iowa, because everything's reps for him, right? Everything is going to just be experience in his tool belt, getting more valuable experience, more reps. And that's all this year has really been for him. And even if this team was 5-0, 4-1, I still think that it'd be more valuable just to have him playing than winning or losing games. Like the value here is for the future, right? It's thinking a couple years ahead when he now has this year of experience. So I think the more experience we're going to see from him, the better. And I think that that's why he takes a small step forward on Saturday. And he has to take a step forward on Saturday for this team to win. The running game is a question, a big question. Is Isaac Garundo going to be back, who's the speed back, who's been out for a few weeks? Jalen Berger looks like he is definitely not playing. So who's going to step forward? Is it going to be Nakia Watson? Is he capable of, you know, having a 75-yard rushing game? We haven't seen it from him this year. We'll see. His patience is something that's been a question mark. Like, right, is he just kind of barreling himself into the teeth of the defense right when he gets the football instead of kind of taking that split Le'Veon Bell-like second, right, to survey? That's kind of been the issue for him, I feel like, in the last year and a half. But then who's going to be available on offense, right? Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor right now are both questionable. That's what Paul Chris said this morning in the press conference, actually, that he's not sure about either of them, if either of them can go. So we'll see how much Graham Mertz has at his disposal. And then on defense, it's just avoiding big plays, because when this team avoids a few chunk plays, you're not going to beat Wisconsin's defense, Jim Leonard's defense, with – right, 10 plays, 75-yard, five-minute drives. You're just not going to beat them that way. You have to have some explosive play to beat this defense, and we saw it against Iowa. 6 points allowed in the first half, and then all three touchdowns in the second half were just huge plays. A Goodson 80-yard run, right? It kind of skews the stats. Iowa only had 13 first downs against Wisconsin and 28 points. Wisconsin had 11 first downs and 7 points, and the reason is just those big plays. Two to Smith Marset. You saw the one where he got hurt on the backflip. That and the Goodson run. So avoiding big plays and hopefully having some guys back, right? Either Davis or Pryor would be huge. And then Graham Mertz taking care of the ball would be a huge step forward for him, just taking care of the football and having a runner step forward against the Minnesota defense that will definitely allow you to run on them.
All right, man. Well, I don't know how you want to do this prediction stuff, or if you have any other questions for me too. I don't know how you want to go through games. I know you do the betting stuff every week, but I'm new to at least talking about it on air. I'm perfectly aware of how the betting works. I've lost plenty of money on my own, but how do you want to go about it?
Yeah. So let's run through every single Big Ten Champions Week game. We can give we can just give straight, you know, against the spread. If you like an underdog outright. You like an underdog outright. Give us that too. We'll do over-unders and against the spread for every single game. And then for Minnesota, Wisconsin, we can give obviously outright winner plus against the spread, plus a little bit more into why. Running through every single Big Ten, I could call it Champions Week, but that's honestly being generous at this point. We only got 4 games left. A couple have been canceled. A couple have been changed around. It's weird, but let's run through every single game right now and give you our picks against the spread. We'll start with Illinois and Penn State, the Nittany Lions, as 15.5 favorites to open. The over-under set at 52. Sean Clifford is back. Penn State has looked a little better than they looked over the first 5 weeks, but it's still been a disaster of a season for Penn State and in Happy Valley. How do you see this one playing out?
I mean, 15.5 is a lot of points. If it was like even a 10, I'd say easy Penn State. I think Penn State has the talent, just raw talent, to be able to beat up on Illinois pretty bad. They've won 3 games in a row. It seems like things are turning around for them. Illinois, I believe is one of the bottom feeders of the Big Ten. They got two wins. They beat Nebraska, a team that Minnesota only beat by seven. And I think those teams in both Nebraska and Minnesota are both a couple of notches above what Illinois should be. I mean, again, it's 15 and a half points, man.
It's a lot of points.
I'll take it. You know what? Illinois is without a head coach. They don't have a head coach right now. So I'll take Penn State.
Yep. I'm gonna take Illinois and the Fighting Lovie Smiths because I think that they are going to play this game in some ways for their coach. Like, this is kind of like the last game of the Lovie Smith tenure, even though he's not coaching. I feel like this is sort of the last goodbye to Lovie Smith. And if you watched the players on Twitter and saw what they were saying about him and how much they loved him and how much they cared about him as just a person, I feel like they are going to come out and play for him a little bit. So I think that this game stays closer than the 15. I'll take Illinois and the points in Rod Smith's head coaching debut for the Fighting Illini. Moving on, we got Nebraska canceled. It's all canceled. Ohio State and Northwestern, the only game that truly, truly matters in terms of who can win a national championship and the Big Ten's college football playoff hopes, of course, riding with Ohio State, unless Northwestern somehow wins this game, I guess. But even then, I still could not see the Wildcats getting in. Ohio State minus 20. I have a very strong opinion on this. What do you think?
I'm interested to hear what your opinion is on it since you say it's so strong. My opinion is the common one, and that Ohio State's going to blow these guys out. I mean, Northwestern's good. They're perfectly a really good football team. They're on the right direction. It's just Ohio State's another level of football. You know, if you can play with Ohio State, Indiana had a really good game and was able to play with Ohio State. A lot of people would argue Indiana was better than Ohio State in that game, but they still lost by a touchdown. That's just the way that Ohio State runs things. They have to have a really pretty poor game, and you have to have probably the best game of your season to be able to get close with them. I don't see that happening in Indianapolis.
So the only way I see Northwestern covering this spread, honestly, is Ohio State jumping on them early, which is what I see them doing regardless. And then kind of that Indiana effect where Ohio State lets up a little bit. Justin Fields makes a few mistakes when they're already up by a few scores, and you kind of allow Northwestern to creep back into the game. So I love, 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 love the Buckeyes in this, but I'd much rather have that first half number, whatever it is, minus 10, minus 11, than the minus 20. I think Ohio State jumps on Northwestern early. I think that this game is never truly close, but a backdoor cover is much more possible to me with that second half bigger number with the game already basically over than it is with that first half number where I think Ohio State's just, you know, all gas, no brakes for the first 20 or 30 minutes of this game. I don't think they're going to let up at all. I think it's going to be a three-score game by halftime. I wish I could say something different to you, but I'd be lying. The talent gap is ridiculous.
And again, Ohio State hasn't played in however many days it's been now either. So they're going to be ready to get out onto that field and get off to a hot start.
There's rumors about no Chris Olave. That's not confirmed, but there was confirmation that Ohio State was missing a key offensive player, and then all the Buckeye fan boards, whatever we're saying, we think it's Olave. So take that for what it's worth, but looks like Justin Fields is healthy, ready to go, and looks like Ohio State is basically as full as they've been roster-wise in a few weeks, because that Michigan State game, they were also really, really depleted their last time out with COVID and everything going on. Let's get to the game that everybody cares about. Minnesota, Wisconsin, everybody listening to this podcast cares about. Too many points, in my opinion. Wisconsin minus 12. And I've seen it bet down to like 10 and a half at its lowest. But am I right that that's too many points?
Yes, I think it's too many points. I said the same thing with, I'm going to bring up Andrew Wade when I talked to him with Iowa at the Iowa game.
Wednesday.
There we go. And I feel like with this matchup, you know, in every game, there's the four possible outcomes. Either Wisconsin wins in a close one, Minnesota wins in a close one, or it's a blowout on either side. I think the only scenario you don't see here, I think it's really unlikely that Minnesota blows out Wisconsin in this game. I could see Wisconsin blowing out Minnesota. I could see any side winning in a close one. So in that respect, yeah, you could bet Wisconsin minus 12 and a half. It's not unfeasible that that would happen. But I see this being a much closer game, whoever wins it, and we'll talk about outright winners. But as far as points, I got to take Minnesota.
I would lean towards the Gophers as well. I don't love either side in this game. The 12 is kind of a strange number, to be honest. And you can have a close game that ends in a 14-point win. So I don't love that number. but I would have to take Minnesota in the points. It's just too many points for a Wisconsin offense that hasn't shown it, right, the last 3 weeks. Like, can they get to 21? And if Wisconsin's offense just can't score and Wisconsin's defense doesn't make a huge play, then they're not going to score enough points to cover this number. So we'll see. The over-under is unsurprisingly pretty low, but I think a little higher than most Wisconsin games have been recently at 47.5. That's a little high, a little bit.
I want to say it's a little high too. I've said all season that the Gophers are built to play in a high scoring game. The offense has the explosiveness that you talked about has been something that's hurt Wisconsin before. Mo Ibrahim can break off a big run at any time. When they had Rashad Bateman and Chris Ottman-Bell on either sides on the wide receiver spots, they have the ability to go deep, play a high-low game to try and spread out a defense and get big plays that way. I've kind of, though, been contradicted by that as far as totals go this season. Minnesota scored at least 24 points in every game but one this year. That was the matchup against Iowa. But then all of a sudden, this defense only gives up 17 points to Nebraska, something I wasn't expecting after 22 days off.
A good Nebraska offense, by the way. And I'm the last person in the history of the world that will give Nebraska credit on Locked On Badgers. If you go back and listen to any preseason stuff, I was telling everybody they'd be 1-7 and be a disaster. But their offense actually looked better than I thought it would.
Yeah, and the Minnesota defense held them to a decent, a respectable amount of points. So it seems like what PJ Fleck has been saying about, hey, just give this time, let these guys get some games in who haven't played at this level before, and it'll get better. It seems like it's getting better, but I still want to take the over. It's, again, just that kind of, maybe it's just the same kind of deal in the preseason. I was thinking this is a team that's built to play high-scoring games, but I guess at 47, I'll lean toward, this is going to be a classic Big Ten ground and pound it wrestle of a football game, and I'll take the under.
Gotcha. I'm gonna also take the under. I don't necessarily love the under. I just feel like Wisconsin's offense has to find something more than they found in the last 3 weeks. Like it's just gotta happen, please, 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 please. But I think Wisconsin wins this game outright. I think it's a huge win momentum wise going into the offseason. Do you see a way Minnesota pulls this upset?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, especially with the way they played last week, if that game hadn't happened, I would be putting, I'd probably take Wisconsin minus 12.5 just because of the talent I know that's on that Wisconsin offense. If it's at full strength, again, you mentioned all the question marks around that, but I can easily see Minnesota winning this game outright, especially with the struggles that your team has had on the offensive side of the football. I'm still confident Minnesota puts up points. Like I said, 24 points at least in every single game except the Iowa game this season. So I don't see a Badgers team shutting Minnesota down, shutting Mo Ibrahim down, and shutting Chris Ottman-Bell down. Maybe that deficiency without Rashad Bateman is exposed a little bit more on Saturday that brings the point total down a bit, and that's part of the reason why I take the under. But I could easily see Minnesota winning this game, and I guess I'll take him too, obviously. I mean, that's my podcast, man.
All right, take them out right. I like it. Locked On Gophers. You got to take Minnesota out right, right? It's a battle for the axe. What are you going to come back to listeners and tell me you think the Badgers are winning this game? Heck no.
Got to keep respect on my name here, man.
Thank you for hopping on, Nate. Enjoyed this crossover. Let's do it again for basketball season.
Definitely. No doubt about it. That one might be a little bit more ugly, but we'll see.
I think it definitely will be. As always, On Wisconsin, and see you on Monday for a breakdown of Louisville and Wisconsin and Minnesota back-to-back Saturday games. We're breaking down both on Locked On Badgers.